The best thing about pollen? It's temporary, just like the Autobel Car Wash Pollen Pass. Enjoy 3 months of savings, unlimited car washes, and a thorough cleaning every visit. Our team of experts will clean the pollen from the inside out in just 15 minutes or less. That's right, our team does all the work. This will be your favorite pollen season ever. Get your pollen pass on the Autobel app, and when the pollen ends, so does your plan.
People can tell when you Autobel.
Interior and exterior cleanings with full service and super unlimited plans only.
The secret's oat for nourishing your sensitive skin. Start each day with Aveeno's Daily Moisturizing Body Wash in the shower, which gently cleanses and doesn't dry out your skin. Then slather on the Daily Moisturizing Body Lotion for 24 hours of clinically proven hydration. This powerful combo gives you 2 times the moisture in 2 easy steps, thanks to both nourishing oat formulas. Get softer, smoother skin and shop Aveeno now at Target.
Are you a lifelong learner searching for the next career lane? Fix Auto USA is a top collision repair provider that offers opportunities for continuous training and education, with an emphasis on emerging technologies, giving back to the community, and uplifting its team members. Fix Auto USA may be the perfect fit for you. Visit fixautousajobs.com for more. That's fixautousajobs.com.
It's the Back Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys Golf Show is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the Tour B ball today. By the club at Sea Palms. By RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community. By Club Car, the leader in sport, utility, and personal vehicles. And by CJ's Italian Restaurant, for the best of the deep dish pizza and thin crust, check out their menu at CJ'sItalianRestaurant.com. That's CJ'sItalianRestaurant.com. On the show, we're going to be talking with Randy Myers, who is the Director of Fitness at the Sea Island Golf Performance Center, about his work with the Ryder Cup and now soon the President's Cup, working with them on their fitness program their nutrition. Which is very interesting, I found out. Different things for everybody on the team. And then we'll also talk with David Faraday on his life now with the LIV Tour. And he's still doing David Faraday Live. So we'll talk a little bit about his life there. We're also going to talk with Morgan Lohatsky, who is now the manager of the women's golf at Georgia State Golf Association. And Morgan, we appreciate you being with us and welcome to the GSGA.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you having me on.
It's a pleasure. So you're here for, this is your second month on the job. Tell us a little bit about what excited you about this opportunity with the GSGA.
Yeah, so I had previously played a couple junior tournaments with the GSGA back in high school. And I was just recently in Kentucky at Eastern Kentucky University. I was a graduate assistant for both teams, and I kind of saw the job opening up. And you know, I've kept up with GSGA for a little while, and just seen the great strides that they've made towards, you know, making golf accessible for everyone, and just allowing all skill levels to be able to play. So that's really what excited me, and just being able to grow women's golf in general is what also excited me. I'm very passionate about the game, passionate about growing women's golf in general. So just being able to do that is also what really interested in me in the job. And I'm excited to continue to grow the women's game, whether it's amateur level or it's just the fun level, the ladies that just want to get into it for fun. So
well, you've got quite a bit going on. I mean, you sent me a list of events, and one of them in June is here at the place I am, which is the Sea Island Golf Club. But tell us all about the women's championship event, starting out with the women's four-ball championship.
Right, yeah. So we have some multitude events throughout the year. These are our championship events, and these are kind of our highest level events for the women's side. So our four ball championship is going to be at Conningate This is actually going to be for the women's and senior women's side. This is going to be March 13th through the 15th. We're excited to host that. And then we also put on our Georgia Women's Club Championship. This is going to be at Sky Valley Country Club, October 29th through the 30th. This is four players from each member club. The structure is four ball gross and net, both sides counting for each total score. And then we also do our Women's Mid-Amateur Championship. This is only the second time that we actually put this event on, which is very exciting, kind of getting this going. This is going to be at Sea Island Golf Club on June 17th through the 18th. So I know you're located in Sea Island. So anyone interested, you can sign up through GSGA. This is for anyone that's no younger than 21, not on a college team. We had just recently actually started a discounted entry fee for those 21 to 29 that may need some financial assistance and kind of going through those financial obstacles during that time in their lives. We do this kind of to encourage women to get back into competitive golf and kind of get them coming back after they maybe have played college or anything like that. So, and then we also host one of our most competitive and highest level competition on the women's side, which is our Women's Amateur Championship. This is going to be June 28th through the 30th at Country Club of Columbus. And what's pretty cool about this one is the winner of this is going to be exempt into the U.S. Women's Amateur Championship this year. So it kind of makes this winning this even more coveted and very exciting to win. So we are excited to get started and we get started in a couple weeks and look forward to continuing to put on these championship events.
Yeah. So now in your second month that you're at the job, now you all of a sudden have, you're going to be running for the rest of the year with all these events. I mean, that's kind of exciting. I've talked to the guys at GSGA and one of the things that I've been impressed with is not only the programs they're doing for the men and the boys, but also the women and the kids are just growing like crazy.
Right.
And you guys have done a great job and now you're going to be able to do that. And you've also got a For Fun Women series coming up. Tell us a little bit about that, Morgan.
Yeah. So this For Fun Women series, we've actually only done for around 2 years. This will be, I think, our third year that we're doing it. We kind of try to aim this towards women that want to enjoy the game of golf, kind of have fun, socialize with other women's golfers as well. So in the past, we've kind of done clinics and scramble play days at Bobby Jones Golf Courses where we are located currently. This year, I'm kind of wanting to expand a little bit beyond Atlanta women's golfers and kind of get out beyond Atlanta and kind of get in touch with those golfers that are not currently living in Atlanta, maybe north or south. So we don't really have a set schedule right now for this. I'm currently in the works with that. We actually are having a kickoff event at Top Golf on April 27th. So anyone interested in that can keep an eye out for that. I also have a Facebook page going on right now. If you want to follow that, it's For Fun Women's Series GSGA. So if you want to get in touch with me or anybody else, you can go give me an email about that or whatever. But I'm really excited to be able to continue to host this event for women's golfers and kind of show them that golf is always going to be fun if you try to make it fun. So,
well, you've played a lot of golf. Obviously, you played, in college. This is a great program. Do you feel that a lot of women don't have fun at this game?
Well, for me personally, I played since I was 12 years old, and playing that long kind of is a little bit of a burnout, especially after so many years of just competitive tournaments every single weekend and going in. I mean, in college, your season is it's fall and spring. So it's a lot to put in and all the time you have to put in. So burnout can be a big thing. So we're trying to express to these ladies that, if you go out and you come to these events, you're probably going to meet someone that was probably in the same boat as you at one point, and you can kind of connect on that aspect and, you know, just meet and mingle and maybe have some fun and have some play days outside of this turn, this for fun series as well. So,
well, as we talked about, women's golf is growing like crazy. I mean, there yes. are all over the place. There's, you know, ladies that are playing, you know, nine holes only. There's a lot of people playing 18. A lot of them walk, which I'm very impressed with. And your events that are coming up, the mid-amateur that's coming up, I volunteered at that a couple last year, and unbelievable talent that's out there is just incredible.
Absolutely, yeah. It's good to see the mid-amateur side kind of stick out, because those are the golfers that are trying to get back into competitive golf, like I said. So we're glad that we're able to put that on and start that up for those golfers.
And the women's amateur that you have coming up in June, not long after the mid-am, that's going to be here. That is, mm-hmm. as you said, that's one of your highest level of competitive women's event. How many women will you have in that event?
We don't have our date hasn't closed yet. So this will actually close, I believe on June 12th. So, this is, I'm trying to remember the max number. We usually have between anywhere like, 50 to 75, just depends on the year.
Okay.
But,
and how do they qualify?
Like I said, I'm new. I'm trying to learn everything. I'm trying to get in the swing of things. So,
I understand. So, Morgan, how do they qualify for the amateur tournament?
So we don't do qualifying for that. We just do it's based on low handicap after entries close. So, on the women's side, we do not do qualifying. The men's side, we do.
Okay. So, what's their handicap? What do they have to have, or what's the highest you would take?
Right now our highest handicap is going to be a 10. That's going to be our max.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
And, just a lot of things going on. You've got to be excited because you're bringing some other things that maybe you've always wanted to do that now the GSGA is going to give you the opportunity to grow even more the women's side.
Right.
And
yeah.
What are some things that you would like to do that you're not doing now as that we may see in the future with the GSGA?
As far as the women's side, I'd really just, like I said, continuing to grow the fun side of it and just getting golfers into back into playing. We're trying to in the works of putting in some things that hopefully will get golfers starting at like a 27 yards and starting, and the goal of it is going to be shooting 36, just kind of showing them that it's easy to, you know, start from 27 yards and then continue to work your way back until you're shooting 36 at where you would normally play. So like I said, just continuing to make golf fun and hopefully just growing that side of the women's game even more so than just the amateur side, but also just kind of getting amateur golfers interested in playing and getting the like entry fees to rise as well. We really are striving to make entries be higher each and every year as well. So,
So how can they get in touch with you, and is it all on your website, gsga.org?
Yeah, so if you want to sign up through anything, you can go to gsga.org. You go to competitions, and then it should be under there. We do all of our signups and everything through Golf Genius. So you can do, if you have a Golf Genius profile under GSGA, you can sign up. But yeah, that's how you get signed up through there.
Awesome. Morgan, appreciate your time. Congratulations. Welcome. As the new manager of women's golf at GSGA, good luck and hope to see you soon.
Thank you. And I appreciate you having on and appreciate your time.
I'm Mark Edelman from the On the Mark podcast and Mark Edelman Golf. Do some work with CBS Sports, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys podcast.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. Thanks for being with us. We are with the Director of Fitness at the Sea Island Golf Performance Center, Randy Myers. And Randy, you had the opportunity with the Ryder Cup to go through all the players and pack what they were going to eat on the course. How did that come about, and how difficult was that, knowing that each one is not the same?
Well, over the years, Rich, we've really tried to find out various aspects of each player's performance. It's a big part of the Ryder Cup and President's Cup. As a matter of fact, on my desk right now, I'm working on the President's Cup for Jim Furyk. And part of the nutrition aspect is having on-course snacks available. And there's only 5 golf carts allowed on the golf course at a time. So we put out stations and pack food for each player. So an example, as we discussed before, Wyndham Clark will eat, he doesn't like yeast, so he'll eat more of a vegan type of sandwich where he would have almond butter and a protein bread, where Jordan Spieth is almost completely the opposite, where he'll eat white bread or rye bread with turkey and cheese. So you've got two various approaches, very, very different, but each of those individuals are trying to maximize their performance. You also note that most of these players are eating on every other hole or every third hole. They're consuming something, whether right. it's fruit or protein. Obviously, there's various components of that. You could have protein bars or beef jerky, but also you could have fresh fruit like apples, oranges, bananas as well. So it really is something that most amateur golfers could benefit from tremendously, understanding what it is that they need to be ingesting during their 4 or 5 hour round of golf.
Yeah, and most amateur golfers probably don't do that on a regular basis. Their idea of getting a beer, hot dog, and chips at the turn, oh man, I feel good after that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes back to when I first got on tour back in the late 1990s. You know, in the locker rooms, there were, you know, Snickers bars and, right. you know, candy bars and chips, and that was pretty much the alternative snack. And today, you wouldn't even find a Snickers bar anywhere on the golf course or in the locker yeah. room. These guys are very highly motivated, primarily because of the amount of money they're playing for, to perform the same. Just like their fitness, they're doing the same thing every day, day after day. They're also trying to eat in a similar manner so that their performance is maximized.
All right, so from an amateur standpoint, how many holes should they be able to play and then recharge? Should it be every third hole, every 6 holes? What would you suggest?
I think nutrition and hydration both start the day before. So someone who is really interested in playing in their member guest for 2 days or 3 days should start to monitor their intake of food and water prior to the event. So the day before, they need to start the supplementation aspect of it. Obviously, most people know that pasta and healthy foods, vegetables the night before would be a good thing. A good solid breakfast. You'll see in the locker rooms now on tour, there is a very big nutritional influence with what's available from, you know, they have obviously omelet bars every week and fresh fruits available, even for the caddies now. I mean, the nutrition at the players for the caddies is really determined well in advance. So I would say on the course, it's generally, if you watch TV, you'll see these guys, it seems like they're eating every hole, but it's really every other hole. Or every third hole that they're consuming, probably, you know, anywhere between 150 and 250 calories.
Well, fitness, you've been in a long time. I mean, you've got a book out about it, and it's really taken a stronghold over the last 25 years, even more, probably since Tiger. And all of these guys now, if you walk down the range, you don't see a Statler anymore, Craig Statler type physique. You see tall and thin flat bellies, I guess is what us older people call them, and it's just taken a different approach.
Well, I started in the golf fitness industry in 1990, and really it was not a big aspect. You know, the 19th hole was more of a cocktail see-through right. or a beer right. And some fries after their round. Today, you know, the whole day is predetermined. Every player that we work with has a formula. If they play early, if they play late, what they do in their practice rounds, their their work on the range, their putting work is all done with specialists, their fitness training. And even today, it's become more well known that the physical therapist and massage therapists are going to be there before and after the round as well. So one of the things I would say has changed is more of the acceptance. Starting with kids as young as 12 here at Sea Island, we begin to program them on what they need to do to perform at a high level. If it's not working, we make adjustments. But by the time they get to college, we really know exactly what each player is going to be doing in advance in their practice rounds, also during their tournament play. So I would say the biggest thing with fitness at all levels of golf is the acceptance of the need to have a program that people do.
And that's falling over into the amateurs. I mean, whether you're a scratch golfer or a 20 handicap, a lot of those folks are saying, I need to get a trainer. I need maybe to take some lessons. I need to take care of myself a little bit more.
Well, it's a lifetime game. And so people generally get more time to play after they've retired. So it's a little late in the game often if you're not starting at some point in your mid-30s or mid-40s to begin to implement a program. So what we try to do with our recreational golfers is try to instill the idea that if you are set up in a schedule each day, you know what you're going to do in terms of the amount of time you're spending short game, full swing, when you have your lessons, when you're doing your stretching, what you're doing pre-round, what you're doing post-round. It seems complex, but it's really simple once you establish a pattern that works for you. I have players now that I work with who are in their 60s and 70s who wouldn't even hit a golf ball without stretching. That was almost unheard of 10 and 15 years ago. Right. So we kind of model everything we do after our tour players. We've had tremendous experience here at Sea Island with guys like Davis Love, obviously, and Matt Kuchar and Zach Johnson, you know, kind of the guys that have been around for a long time, teaching the younger guys like Harris English and Brian Harman, Patton Kizzire, what to do. And then it fed into, you know, obviously the Keith Mitchells and the JT Postons, and now, you know, guys like Andrew Novak and Ben Griffin, Davis Thompson. So, you know, we kind of have a legacy, and these guys learn a lot from one another. They learn what to eat, how to prepare, how to practice, how they train, what they need to do during tournament weeks. And so if you do none of that at home, you need to really start by carving out initially your game plan. What you need to do, you need to get stronger? Do you need to get more flexible? Do you need to have a club fitting? Have you taken any lessons? How much are you playing? What's your goals? And then we can build a plan for them accordingly.
Yeah, you and I have talked in the past about how important stretching is. And a lot of guys stretch a few minutes before they start to play, and they haven't done anything for the whole week. You and I talked about stretching every day.
Well, I mean, I think without question, the flexibility aspect of individual golf performance is probably the thing that's driving the game. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, these guys are bigger and taller. They're athletic. Many of them played other sports their whole life prior to playing golf. And we do encourage young kids to play multiple sports until they determine that golf is their sole focus. Therefore, you're seeing athletes from other sports who are performing well at a high level in golf. And so I would say the flexibility aspect is probably the easiest part. It's also the aspect that most people realize they need more than anything. As you get older, your swing gets shorter, you start to lose distance, so you move up a tee. Nothing wrong with that, you know, playing it forward. But the reality is, starting with a daily stretching, foam rolling. Today we've got Theraguns, which is an electric gun that you can kind of get in there and dig into body parts that aren't necessarily as flexible. We work with a lot of different physical therapists and massage therapists here on the island, coordinating our efforts in both performance and rehabilitation. So I would say if you want to do anything, flexibility. And now with the internet, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, all those things, there's constantly information feeding in there on what to do and how to do it. I think the big disconnect is people don't know what to do. Right. And I get people who are even high-level players. I go back to when I started. Gary Player was one of my first professional golf athletes, and he told me he didn't think half the things he was doing was correct for golf. Lee Trevino, Hale Irwin, all the way up through, you know, with the current aspect of prospects that we have, they're doing flexibility movements every day, pre and post, to try to make sure that their body feels the same.
All right. What is the biggest misconception, do you think, most amateur golfers feel about fitness, that I'll never get there. Is that one of the reasons?
I think the biggest misconception, and it has been for a long time, is that heavy strength training is necessary for speed and power.
Right.
That's really not true. In some cases, particularly with hypermobile athletes, you know, you saw what Tiger did to transform his body. Obviously, there's a lot of young guys out there playing on tour that have built weight training programs into their model, and that works. Generally, we do it more in the off season or off weeks with heavier lifting. But if you just would adopt what most players do on a day-to-day basis when they're playing golf, which is a fundamental 30-minute warm-up, you could cut it down to as little as 15 or 20 minutes every day. And a majority of that is balance. We know the best players in the world have exceptional balance and weight transfer. And then also we know that they're the most mobile. So regardless of size and shape, the best players in the world have incredible mobility. And I remember when I worked with Boo Weekly, who is not a small guy and he's not necessarily a fit guy.
Right.
When we took him through a series of flexibility tests, it was astronomical what this guy could do. And it's no different with players who were smaller and maybe not as powerful. Brian Harman is maybe one of the most flexible athletes I've ever trained. Balance-wise, across the board, from Brooks and Dustin and guys that you know are elite major winners, they have incredible balance, and their flexibility is obviously the tip of the iceberg for them. Their foundation is going to be in their cardiovascular health, because they're able to walk 6-7 miles, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. But also the strength component kind of ties together. If you are mobile, you can get stronger. If you're not mobile, you need to get more flexible.
A lot of days, a lot of people now are walking. Most courses now accept that. Somebody that wants to begin to start walking, what would you recommend to them as far as number of days? If they're playing golf 3 times a week, should they walk all 3 times just to get, or should they start like 1 time and then work up to 2?
Well, the first thing you could do if you ride every time is begin to walk every other hole. So if you're riding with somebody, you can literally walk the fairway, you know, from your approach shot in, or from your tee ball to the fairway. Obviously, you know, there are smaller bags now that you can carry and are lighter, but the best advantage people have is by getting a decent push cart and learning how, or pull cart, and learning how to use those several days a week. Here at Sea Island, we walk and play 3 club games. Pick 3 clubs out of your bag, go out and play 9 holes. Play the front tees and walk the front tees, you know, and begin by doing that, carrying your bag. But your question is how many days? I think it depends on the individual, but certainly there's no more enjoyment than finishing 9 holes or 18 holes walking, knowing that you got some exercise in and you were able to perform at a higher level. Because, you know, although a necessary evil, golf carts are great for pace of play. But realistically, if you're in position, walking is just as fast, if not faster.
Totally agree. All right. So what 3 clubs, you just mentioned it, what 3 clubs would you take to play?
Well, obviously, depending on the tee boxes that you're playing, you would probably have a hybrid or you know, a 5-wood for off the tee. And then obviously a mid iron, probably an 8 or 7 iron. And then if you can learn to putt with your wedge, then you got a huge advantage, because you can use your wedge around the green and then learn to putt with it. And it's truly a skill that will work into your performance with putting, because to hit a 56 degree wedge as a putt on the green, it's truly a skill. It also gets you to stay down on your putts and allows you to perform almost at the same level. A lot of times you'll see a player break a club, break their putter in anger, and putt with a wedge. Or with their hybrid, and they're just as good within, you know, several feet of speed. So I would say 5-wood, 7-iron, and a wedge.
All right, you're working with Jim Furyk on the President's Cup. Last question, how long will that take you to get there, and how often will you and Jim talk about it? Of course, he's got to choose the team first.
Well, yeah, and that's already, you know, there are players now we know who are probably going to be a lock for the team. I mean, Wyndham Clark's played extremely well. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler will not miss that team.
Right.
Brian Harmon, who's one of our local guys, has played extraordinarily well, winning the Open Championship last year. So we kind of know that team, or starting to know that team, aside from the selection process. But we're building out our gym at Royal Montreal right now. We have a gym at the hotel in the team room. We have a gym at the course in what they call the cabin, which is basically a tent. So we already have equipment ordered in that aspect. I met with Jim at the players. We're working with our nutrition team right now, building that up. And then the final piece of it, when we know the full team along with the captains, is going to be what physical therapists are representing in the United States, what trainers are going to be a part of the team. And that group really has begun to formulate their plans with the players that they work with. The tour provides a therapist and a chiro, and then each individual brings their PT or their trainer. They right. can select one or the other. Then the other aspect of it is the team of coaches. You know, Randy Smith, who's a good friend of mine, he'll obviously be there with Scheffler. If Harris English or Brian Harmon makes the team, Justin Parsons, who's our local swing coach, will be there with the players prior to the event. So we outfit all those guys. They all are team, part of the team. And just like the coaches and trainers on a Super Bowl team, they're a big aspect of the team. We try to provide a comfort level in these events, very similar to a tour event. It's just 12 guys teeing it up against 12 guys.
Randy, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
No doubt. You know, we're really trying to gear up for that in September for the President's Cup. And, you know, I'd love to keep you posted on that. We've got a great opportunity to start molding toward the Ryder Cup in a year at Bethpage. So, you know, this thing I've been involved with now over 20 years, and I always tell this story. My first Ryder Cup was in Boston, and Ben Crenshaw was the captain, and it was the great comeback that we had in 99. And on my first Ryder Cup, my first job was to go get Ben Crenshaw a carton of cigarettes. That has changed tremendously over the years. Jim Furyk will not have me running out for cartons of cigarettes. Protein bars and supplements, absolutely. But we ship everything in on those things, and I appreciate your interest. And certainly I hope your listeners understand that it isn't really as hard as it looks to get yourself ready, but it is a game of a lifetime, and any improvements you can make physically or nutritionally will certainly benefit you for the long term.
Hi, this is Jay Blasey of Jay Blasey Golf Design, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
And welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. Our next guest is a former pro golfer turned broadcaster. He is David Faraday. Good morning, David, and thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good morning, Rich.
I'm sure many have asked you this question. Your jump from CBS to NBC and then to the LIV Tour. Tell me some of the things you were thinking about during all these processes.
Innocent gun owners are locked up every day. Acting in self-defense, even when you do everything right, can put your freedom at risk. Prepare for everything that happens before, during, and after defending yourself by joining the U.S. Concealed Carry Association. USCCA members are educated, trained, and insured, providing the peace of mind every protector needs. See why responsibly armed Americans choose the USCCA as their all-in-one solution for self-defense. Visit uscca.com/protect to join today.
The best thing about pollen? It's temporary. Just like the Autobell Car Wash Pollen Pass. Enjoy 3 months of savings, unlimited car washes, and a thorough cleaning every visit. Our team of experts will clean the pollen from the inside out in just 15 minutes or less. That's right. Our team does all the work. This will be your favorite pollen season ever. Get your pollen pass on the Autobell app, and when the pollen ends, so does your plan.
People can tell. We do Autobell.
Interior and exterior cleanings with full service and super unlimited plans only.
Are you a lifelong learner searching for the next career lane? Fix Auto USA is a top collision repair provider that offers opportunities for continuous training and education, with an emphasis on emerging technologies, giving back to the community, and uplifting its team members. Fix Auto USA may be the perfect fit for you. Visit fixautousajobs.com for more. That's fixautousajobs.com.
Well, you know, it's a fella trying to make a living, you know, at the bottom line is, but it was also, you know, the move from NBC to LIV. I'm talking about the opportunity to be a lead analyst for the first time, to, you know, be in the studio at 18, with Jerry Fultz and Arlo White. To be a lead analyst, it was just after, nearly 30 years in the business, the first opportunity I would have to do that.
Right. And what intrigued you about the Live Tour? Was it the format? Was it the opportunity for you to be that lead analyst?
Well, yeah, it was the opportunity to be a lead analyst, and the fact that we have such a high quality field every week. With the PGA Tour, you get your big events and your small events. You know, these are 14 big events, with big names in the field, and the opportunity to be around them.
All right, the talks between the tour and the PIF are still going on. They've had one deadline at the end of last year, didn't happen. What have you heard from your side on the recent meetings in the Bahamas between all the parties, including Jay Monahan and Tiger Woods?
What have I heard?
Yeah.
I've heard pretty much what everybody else has heard, that nothing. It's in many ways it's like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. It's just difficult to say what's going to happen. I would like to see the guys having more access to the majors, and being able to play some of the bigger events on the PGA Tour. It's kind of like tennis. You play the four majors and then you play wherever you want.
Right.
Be an ideal situation. But, I'm not sure how close we are to that.
And, the thing that everybody is talking about is that there has been so much talk between LIV, positive and negative, between the PGA Tour, positive and negative. Do you think it has hurt the normal golf fan?
I think it has hurt the PGA Tour.
Okay.
For sure. It has weakened their fields. I don't think it's ultimately, great for golf, what's going on at the minute, but I think it will be in the long run, when we get these things ironed out.
Yeah, we just have to figure out what long run that means, whether it's this year or but 2 or 3 years from now.
Yeah, exactly.
Golf Digest just printed an article about that golf is broken. What are your feelings on that? I haven't read the article, but I have seen some of the headlines, and they're just saying because of this feud that's going on, it's all about money, it's all about this, that golf is really broken right now. It's not in the best place.
Yeah, I haven't seen the article either. I'm not sure if it's broken. It might be cracked.
Okay.
I think we can rebuild it.
Do you really think that the LIV players who left the PGA, and some of those have talked negatively about the PGA, quite frankly, Phil Mickelson seems like he's been doing the most about that. Do you think that if a merger does come, or they figure out a way for them to work together, that they really can? Do you think they can all just get along again?
Yeah, I think so. The bottom line is it's about playing in big tournaments, and then the best way, to get along is to beat these guys. and they want to play together. These are top level athletes that, that want to test themselves against the best in the world. And I don't think that has changed.
Generational money was one of the big things that everybody talked about when the players left the PGA Tour for the LIV Tour. That's going to be hard to beat with the PGA Tour, but they have come up with a lot more money for their events, elevated events, which have increased it even more, even though the fields are smaller. What are your thoughts about that? Do you think LIV played a big part in what the PGA Tour is doing?
Oh, there's no question. For ages, PGA tour players around the world, they paid their own expenses, and if they make the cut, or if they miss the cut, they go home with nothing. We've guaranteed that these kids that are coming out in the PGA Tour, they get $500,000, you know, to deal with those things. And, you know, there are other aspects of it, too, that, you know, that we've touched that are definitely affecting the world of golf, you know, around all the tours.
Do you think, David, that LIV will continue on even if there isn't a merger or a way to them to work with the PGA Tour? Do you think they will continue as you have now?
Yes, I do. You know, we're seeing increases in numbers. We're on 90 streaming platforms, you know, around the world, on the CW. And, you know, we're showing no signs of slowing down. I feel really positive about, you know, the future of LIV.
The viewership, though, may be increasing, but it's probably still not where y'all would like it to be.
Yeah, no, it's not. You know, we are we're heading in the right direction.
And another thing, you have a live event coming up, and I want to ask you some more questions too about LIV, but you have a live event coming up in Augusta. Tell us a little bit more about bringing Faraday Live again back. Think that's great.
Well, yeah, it's been terrific. I've been doing it for about the last 10 years. It's a one-man stand-up show. I don't have any guests. It's just me and a spotlight and a microphone. And it's really a journey through my life, Rich, and a bunch of stories, other people's stories, to be honest. You know, stories about Arnold Palmer, about Ken Venturi, you know, Jack Nicklaus, stories that Tom Watson, you know, that will disappear into the ether, stories about Lee Trevino. Having said that, it's not an entirely golf-centric show. It's the kind of show that someone who isn't a golfer can show up to and just enjoy the comedy. There's a lot of Irish humor in it as well, and the occasional fart joke.
Well, could you give us one of the stories that you might be telling next week at your event?
Well, you know, I tell a lot of Irish jokes, and there's a difference between Irish jokes and the ordinary joke. For a start, you know, we're the only ethnic group left on the planet that you can safely insult without being canceled. you know, we got over it a long time ago. And, you know, Irish jokes are designed to be told in between sips. You know, and if someone's heard it before, it doesn't matter because it's over fairly quickly. I'll tell one about when my father used to tell Flanagan and Murphy jokes. And Flanagan and Murphy were always the two main characters. And Flanagan went to Murphy's bar, and there was a fire at Murphy's bar. And the fire department are fishing through the ashes, you know, and they find Flanagan at the end of the bar covered in charred timbers and soot. And, you know, they drag him out and they say, "Flanagan, you're all right?" He says, "Yes, I am." They say, "Can you tell us how the fire started?" He says, "No, it was on fire when I went in."
What
just
is
reinforcing the stereotype, you know?
Yeah, I got you. So what is one of your favorite stories about Arnold Palmer?
Oh, well, I don't want to, you know, let anything out of the bag before that. But, you know, I played with Arnold three times in my career. Good God, I must be old. You know, and... I remember the first time I shook hands with him. It was the Canadian PGA Championship in right around 1980. And he was the defending champion. And he had, you know, taken the trouble to find out. I'd qualified through winning the Irish PGA Championship. He had found out, you know, that's how I qualified, you know, and a little bit about me, you know, and on the first tee, it was like shaking hands with, you know, there was a warmth and an electricity to him, you know, that and an aura that I've only ever experienced around a few people in my life. I shook hands with, luckily enough, with Nelson Mandela, you know, with, you know, I had the same feeling with President Clinton, you know, and it was just such a special experience, you know. You know, I've got a story about that day. I mean, it was really funny, but I don't want to let it out of the bag.
Yeah, I got you. So you've played with presidents. You've played with President Clinton. Have you played with any other presidents?
No, I haven't played with them, but I had them on my talk show. You know, President Bush, President Clinton. I interviewed President Obama on the White House lawn, and President Trump twice. There's a shock.
Yeah, he doesn't like publicity. That's for sure. All right, let's get back to Liv. What are your thoughts on the format? I've heard a lot of people, they don't like this shotgun format. What are your thoughts?
You know, I was skeptical about the shotgun format to start off with, but what it does is, you know, we've got 60 cameras out there. You know, we can cover every shot, you know, from every player. And I'm a fan of it now. I wasn't really a fan of the team concept either when we first started. You know, I thought, you know, wasn't sure how this was going to work, but it really has fallen into place. You know, and that shotgun start puts them all on the range to start off with, and puts them all on the golf course, and you know, all together at the end as well. You know, and you know, there's a tremendous sense of camaraderie out here in Liv. It's different from any other of the major tours.
All right. Charities have always been a big part of the PGA Tour. They always announce how much they've given to charity throughout all the years. Is Liv doing the same? I don't hear much about that.
Well, each team has its own foundation. You know, that money that the PGA Tour donated throughout the years was generated by local business people around each event, by like the Salesmanship Club in Dallas,
right,
or the Thunderbirds in Phoenix. You know, it's a little ambivalent to say that the PGA Tour was donating it. You know, it was down to the volunteers and all the workers that, you know, that raised that money. The players themselves that live, you know, have been extremely generous in donating to their individual foundations. I couldn't tell you what it is this week in Miami, but it's generally, you know, underprivileged children. Wherever we go, we try to, you know, do something to you know, further their experience, you know, and look after them a little.
But the PGA Tour takes credit for giving all these charities all this money throughout the year, and that's always announced.
Yeah, it is. Well, we do, you know, throughout the broadcast, you know, show, we don't mention figures or anything like that, but, you know, we tell people what we're doing.
All right. A question I was going to ask you, are there any other folks from the PGA Tour that you know about that may be in the process of having discussions with Liv? Or is that something you're not able to talk about?
I'm not really able to talk about that. Well, and I'm not qualified either. You know, I don't know the answer to that question. That's above my pay grade.
Definitely way above mine, for sure. The economies of the cities and the counties that these tournaments are held in, with not only the PGA Tour, but Liv, I'm sure with Liv that there's an opportunity for them to give back. What are your thoughts about them giving to the communities and the counties where they're having the tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great idea. And, you know, it does. I can't, you know, tell you, you know, how much or you know, to what extent, you know, the economic impact is of a LIV Tour event as opposed to a PGA Tour event. But it definitely makes a difference.
I'm sure it does. So what's next for David Faraday? You've got your Live with David Faraday coming up at the Masters. What else is going to happen with you over the next 6 months to a year?
Well, I'm doing my stand-up tour, a kind of a limited version of that. You know, since COVID, I was doing 25 a year. I'll probably do about 10 of those this year. And we've got, after the Miami event, There's Augusta next week, where, and I'm really, really looking forward to that. I love the tournament.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spent 19 years behind, you know, the 15th green there at Augusta. I got some really special memories, some funny stuff that went on the grounds. And then we go to Australia, Singapore, and then back to the continental United States for a little while, and then Spain. We've got a tournament in England. You know, so we're taking the game global.
You certainly are. David, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. I appreciate your candidness and the opportunity for you to be on the show. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Rich. Anytime.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to back9boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at back9boys.com.
Life takes work. You could do it all yourself, but why? Someone delivers your dinner, trims your beard, and even mows your yard. At Auto Bell Car Wash, we don't believe in putting our customers to work. Take a moment to yourself while we clean your car from the inside out. Sure, you could clean your own car, but why? Plus, the Auto Bell app lets you save and earn rewards. Because at Auto Bell Car Wash, we do the work so you don't have to.
People can tell we do Auto Bell.
The U.S. men's national team is returning to the DMV for the first time since 2019 when they take on South American sensation Colombia on June 8th at Commanders Field. Both teams are bringing their stars as they gear up for this summer's huge Copa America. Commanders Field will be rocking. So get your tickets for this high-powered contest at ussoccer.com/tickets.